Welcome to All Over the Map. Take chances and ask questions.
Open discussion on all topics. The driving force. Get her done. Laughter is medicine for the soul. It's a small world after all.
Jim Thompson was born in Edmonton, Alberta. He left his hometown of Westview Village, Winterburn, at age 15 years old to pursue a junior hockey career with the Toronto Marlboros of the OHL. After playing junior for 3 years, Jim's dreams began coming true when he was drafted by the NHL Washington Capitals. He went on to play 10 years of professional hockey on 6 NHL teams, the Washington Capitals, Hartford Whalers, New Jersey Devils, Ottawa Senators, Los Angeles Kings, and the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. Jim's life has not always been that glamorous. Life after pro hockey had its challenges, but he's been fortunate enough to overcome them. He now dedicates his life to helping others, something I respect so much. What an awesome guy. We're going to hear all about Jim's story. I'm looking forward to this one. We want to welcome Jim Thompson to All Over the Map. Extremely grateful to have you on the show, Jim. So we might as well get right into her. You played in Los Angeles with your idol Wayne Gretzky and the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. How many times do you think you've been to Disneyland?
Well, that's a great question. When I played for the Ducks, we were owned by the Ducks, so we can go as much as we want. So what you found was families, what would come in, the first thing they wanted to do was go to Disneyland. So to answer your question, I'm going to say in the time I was there, probably 50 times, somewhere in that vicinity. And after a while, you just let them go do their thing. And I would sit at the gate and let them go and have their fun, you know, because it was all about them, right? So, but yeah, I saw Disneyland a lot.
Nice. All right. So the thing that caught my eye the most about you is your passion for helping kids. Let's talk about that and some of the charities that you're involved with and you give back to.
Well, after my sobriety, you know, I say this frequently now. I don't believe hockey or the NHL was my calling. I believe that, you know, helping people once I became sober and realized that there's a lot of bad stuff going on out there. And so, you know, I work with numerous charities, volunteer a lot of my time. You know, I call it scoring a goal. Today is, you know, saving any individual's life by addiction, mental health, mental illness now. And I spend a lot of hours on the road driving to meet with people and, you know, try to change their lives. So to answer your question, many, many different, I'm working right now with one here in close to home here in Newmarket called In From the Cold, the homeless shelter. So the hockey team that I own, the Aurora Tiger Junior A team, we just sponsored them with an industrial fridge. Their fridge broke down. So imagine, you know, where do they put their food and all that. So any way you can help, as you know, because I know you do a lot of the stuff, and it's rewarding.
Absolutely. Yeah, very fulfilling when you're helping out, just being selfless.
Yeah. Yeah, it's giving, pushing it forward. And, you know, I tell all my young hockey players who come with me, and I said, guys, you know, you know, what's an interesting story quickly is a lady at the homeless shelter said, what to all these young, we had 5 players there. They said, who do you think is homeless? We took a 5-minute break. And when we came back, so they thought it was alcoholics, drug addicts, right, that were homeless. She goes, I'm a school teacher. At the start of COVID, I lost my job. So she wasn't in the union. She was like a supply teacher. Her and her husband lost their house that they were renting, and they lived out of their car for 3 months. And she said, I'm here. She said, this is where my new life is. And you look at a normal woman that had a house, that was going to a job, and everything taken away from her in a short period of time. So my guys, I asked them after, they go, wow, couldn't believe it, right? So it's anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes no prisoners, that's for sure. Yeah. So you've traveled the country with your Dreams Do Come True presentation,
yeah,
inspiring people to live their best life. What was it that ignited the fire from within to use your voice with a purpose?
It's a good question, Ryan. I just, you know, when I look at guys like Theo Fleury and some of the guys in my industry that have cleaned their lives up, they survived, whether it was ODing or suicide or whatever the things that we go through with our demons. But, you know, I just paid attention to what was going on there. And, you know, I came up with this. It's funny if you can see it here. I got a tattoo. Starts off as Dreamer down here, and then dreams do come true with my six NHL teams. And that was years ago. I was watching Hockey Night in Canada with Don Cherry and Ron McLean.
Oh, you're cutting out.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Yeah. So Don Cherry had said on live on Hockey Night in Canada to all the, he goes to all the parents and coaches out there, never crush a kid's dreams, because there's 750 players playing in the NHL and dreams do come true. And I was sitting with my kids and I was kind of trying to find my way. I'd just gone through a divorce and recapturing my, you know, my new life being sober. And I drew up this tattoo and that was it. That was my tagline, dreams do come true. And that's where it all started. So what happens now is I go around and just try to, you know, help people find their way. And, you know, dreams, there's dreams out there for anybody, everybody, as you know, just find your passion and work hard and you can capture it.
Absolutely. You just have to have faith and believe.
Exactly.
100%. You
know, just believe in the process, believe in the process. And you and I both know this being hockey players, how many times it's easy to throw the white flag up and just say, that's it, I quit. And, you know, I tell these guys, quitting's not an option in anything, because soon as you stop working hard, the results are gone. No matter what you're doing, school, life, family, you got to work hard at it. And, you know, there's no other way to get around it. So hard work.
100%. Yeah. So your first game in the NHL, you covered my idol growing up, Mario Lemieux. Mm-hmm. What was that like and how nervous were you?
Well, it's a quick story. I was playing in Binghamton, the American Hockey League, with the Washington's farm team, Binghamton Whalers. And the brass was all there watching me covering a guy, Ross Fitzpatrick, who was a 50-goal scorer. So unbeknownst to me, they were testing me or whatever. So that Sunday night, I walked out to the bus in the Hershey Center, and David Poile, the late Brian Murray, the late Warren Strelo, our goalie coach, Terry Murray, were all standing there, and they called me over. And they said, great job this weekend, and we're going to call you up to play against Pittsburgh tomorrow. So I drove back to Washington with the Warren Strelo, the goalie coach, and go to practice in the morning, right? And there's Mike Gartner, Rod Langway, Scott Stevens, all these guys that were there, and, you know, what you admire when you go into training camp before you get sent down. So anyways, after practice, I get called into Brian Murray's coach's office, and David Poile says, are you nervous? I said, well, a little bit, my first game, but, you know, I feel really good. I'm excited. And he goes, Brian Murray goes, well, he said, you might be a little nervous now, which you did with Ross Fitzpatrick on the weekend. We're going to have you do with Mario Lemieux tonight. Well, I'll tell you, the butterflies, Ryan, is just as I was playing in my head, you know, and Mario at that point was, you know, right neck and neck with Wayne as far as who the greatest player in the world was. So I got to cover Mario in my very first game. And it was, you know, a dream. You talk about the dream. It just, I won't bore you with the whole story on how it went. But years later, I was doing some work with the Ottawa Senators, and Pittsburgh was in playing us. And he was two boxes down. So I went down and introduced myself, which he didn't remember me. So I reminded him of that game, and he said, I remember that game because I was really pissed off with Brian Murray because, you know, they used to call physical players up to get under his skin, and, you know, guys like Gretzky and Yzerman and Lemieux had to deal with that all the time. So he said, I remember the game. I don't remember you. So then he was standing with a couple of buddies, and I go, well, what you probably didn't know, Mario, is that was my very first NHL game. And he starts laughing and hits his buddy. He goes, holy bleep. He goes, imagine your first game having to cover me, like, kind of thing, right? So it was quite the compliment that he said, but we had a good chuckle. I got a good picture with him, and wonderful guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's, I remember I met him in the year that he had 199 points, and he, I think he only played 72 games that year. He had 85 goals. But my father actually worked with Shoppers Drug Mart with the Fair Play organization, and what a class act! I mean, my whole hockey team. I think I was like, you know, 14 at the time, but he took time with every, I mean, there must have been, God, 100 people in that room, but he took time to sign autographs and just shake everybody's hand. What a class act. I mean, God, yeah, that's, I mean, I really looked up to him growing up. Just an awesome guy. So yeah, and what he's done for his organization is amazing.
Oh, you know, the fact that he deferred all that money to keep them alive and beaten cancer and a whole bunch of other things. And, you know, playing with Wayne, what you don't, people don't realize is we get into Boston, get off the bus at the hotel at 3 a.m. and there would be 500 people waiting for his autograph in the middle of winter. And he would actually stand at, he would let all the team off and he would stand at the, where you get off the bus, he would stand there and he would sign as many autographs as he could. And then he would tell the rest of the people, if I didn't get you tonight, come back tomorrow. We got a game the next day. And it's just amazing of what role and role models these guys were. And what you and I would never understand is everywhere they go, Ryan, where you know, they're being asked, picture, autograph. And I know it comes with the fame and who you are, but it does get tiresome for them.
Yeah,
you know, I watched Wayne. There was times where Wayne, he needed the rest and he couldn't because he owed it to the fans to give them, you know, a little bit of time each. So amazing people.
That's awesome. Right on, man. So tell us about your first goal with the Washington Capitals scoring against Ed Belfour.
So what happened? We were playing in Chicago Stadium, which was a very tough rink to play in.
Is that the Madhouse of Madison there?
Yeah, you betcha. My favorite rink to play in. I had a lot of success there with fighting, and I got a couple goals in my career there. So what happened was this, I don't remember scoring, but I got the puck in the slot and I was knocked, not, you know, like blacked out. So what I did was I got a headshot from Dave Manson. And so as soon as I shot the puck, cause I got to see the replay after, he decked me. And today it would have been automatic games, you know, kicked out, probably a 2-3 game suspension was elbow right to the head. So I'm laying on the ice and then I come through and all I can see is the players over me and like, way to go. Congratulations. Right. And I'm like, what? So I hadn't, you know, back then social media wasn't what it was today. So I had to wait for the news, the local news to see my goal. So anyways, it was a nice goal, top corner. And that was my first goal.
That's all. I was talking to Doty Wood a few days back and his first goal went off his butt, but it did go top shelf. So I guess it doesn't, it's not how many, it's the quality or whatever.
Listen,
hey, if it goes
matter.
In, it goes in.
Dottie Woods, I saw your last couple guests. Paxton Schulte and I were friends in Edmonton. So great man. He's got a young boy that's up and coming. Playing hockey, and these guys were hard-nosed guys, Dottie Wood and Paxton, and tough to play against and great people. I never met Dottie, but just listening to people who played with them, character guy, always a guy that you want in your dressing room. So you had two really good guests on there.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate that. So let's hear about Jim Thompson's mentoring program. I know that so many athletes need a lot of guidance to fulfill their dreams.
So I started a program, I guess about 20 years ago. I think I just celebrated my 21st year. And I call it JT Prospects. And what it is, Ryan, it's a seven-week, it's a year-round program, but we'll start with the summer. It's a seven-week training program on ice, off ice. So it's, you know, on ice skills, the gym, and then a lot of classroom with mentoring and all that. And then during the winter, I carry it on, two times a week. So Wednesdays, Thursdays, we'll be skating. If you look at my Instagram or Twitter, you'll see the Boys of Winter. I got a lot of videos up there. But what it is giving back, not only to make them better hockey players, but I always say this, that I feel my experiences in life, I help them more off the ice than I do on the ice. And, you know, the best I guess, thing I get is years later when these young men have grown into fathers, business owners, and they will contact me to say, thank you in such a crucial time in my life for mentoring me to get to where I needed to get to. So that's the power of, you know, you and I talk about push it forward, giving it back, and, you know, helping any young player, you know, with his dream on the ice. But like I say, more so staying away from drugs, you know, the addictions and all that sort of lifestyle that can crush them. It's pretty rewarding. So it's a great program. You know, I'm 54. I've been doing it. You know, I started a hockey school back in Edmonton. I'm from Edmonton when I was 16 years old. I used to work the Edmonton Oilers hockey school, and I thought, wow, this is fun. And then fathers were saying, if I get some ice, can you teach my kids? Here I am, 16 years old, and I've got this little business going. So it's grown into, I've done it, you know, since then till now. My wife always asks me, when are you retiring? And you know what? I work out like yourself. I work out 6 days a week and stay in shape, which my body's healthy. And so as long as I can skate and keep mentoring, I'll keep doing it. But it's a lot of fun helping these young guys.
Awesome. Yeah. So obviously I have to ask, what was it like playing with the great one, Wayne Gretzky? I know you elaborated on it a little bit, but just being in the dressing room with Wayne is, I know, you know, I've heard Marty McSorley say, you know, the guy just burned intensity. What was it like actually just, you know, being in his presence, so to speak, and on the bench and just watching him play?
Well, being my idol, you know, growing up in Edmonton and him winning four cups there and putting the Oilers, you know, as one of the greatest teams ever with a bunch of other great players. So quick story, I had four teams. I was a free agent out of New Jersey. So I had four teams that I could have signed with. And I ended up picking LA, which was the worst choice because guys like McSorley, Jay Miller, Jeff Chychrun, a whole bunch of physical players, it was probably my worst chance to make the NHL. And that was true. I got sent down to New Haven, but I said, I'll figure this out. So my first time seeing Wayne at camp and being on the ice with them, surreal. When I made the Kings and, you know, was part of that group protecting him, just to be at practice with them every day. You know, he was a man of few words. He loved to joke around. He liked me because I was a fun guy in the dressing room. And, you know, there's this quick story where I got picked up by Ottawa in the expansion draft. He went to Barry Mowers and Bruce McNall and said, I'd like Thompson back here. They traded 20 goal score for me just because of the dressing room guy I was. And Bruce McNall came up to me and said, just so you know, Wayne made this trade. So that was a huge compliment to me. The greatest player to ever play, what made him the strongest character, role model, mentor, is he treated everybody the same. And he had an ability, Ryan, to bring up the bottom half of the team to make them feel like the top half. Example, going out for dinner, he'd invite me, the fourth liners. He wouldn't be inviting Gary Curry, Paul Coffey. Not that he was snubbing them. He just looked at, we were very important to our hockey team, and he made us feel important. You know, and I can't tell you that there's a lot of players, you know, the stars hang out with the stars, you know, different cliques, as we know, being on teams. Wayne made it, you know, he'd bring us up to feel like we were the top dogs there. So special individual. Anybody ask me what's Wayne like? He's a better father and a better role model than he was a hockey player. Say no more.
Wow. Yeah, that's incredible. So you're part of an organization called Stop Concussions. Let's talk about that. And how many concussions do you think you've sustained in your career?
So from what I'm understanding, eight. As you know, with the lack of knowledge back in the day, I'm sure it's more. You know, many times the roommate wake you up every 2 hours, take aspirin. So Stop Concussions is just awareness. The Primo brothers are behind it. A guy named Kerry Goulet, who's a friend of mine, also has a podcast called The Gooch. They started this, and it's to let people know not to mess around. If you got the symptoms, you know, awareness, how to deal with it. They got doctors. So it's a platform that they started, you know, because Keith Primo, as you know, suffers from concussion post careers till this day. So it's a great thing to be a part of, and great people to work with.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of people just don't understand the impact on the human brain. You know, it's such an intricate piece of machinery. You know, when you get that banged up, you know, comes back later in life, more or less. You know, when you're younger, you're more resilient. And then as you get older, it's like, holy shit. And you can all, it's like, you know, that pressure on the brain, it's the CTE, and it's, I have it. And, you know, I have a lot of friends that have it. I think most hockey players, you know, they're lucky if they don't have it, but, it can be a very challenging, road to speak.
I sit here, Ryan, right now. I got 24/7 ringing in this year. I've had it probably 10 years now, more maybe. As we get older, we know our memory, you know, we're forgetful and stuff like that. But I, you know, get concerned once in a while when I have dark days and, you know, I can't get outside just because of how depressed I am. And, you know, I do have bad days, and as healthy as I live, and the workouts really help. But, you know, I sit there and go, am I going to be a victim of this, you know, disease that a lot of guys, you know, died from, took their own lives? Like, you know, we start hearing about the brain turn into concrete over the, you know, the years of trauma. So does it bother me? Does it worry me? Yeah. Because I do have symptoms where I'm going, okay, this is not normal. Yeah. And those dark days that I have are awful. And, you know, they do come.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would be horrifying if they came on a regular basis, because then it would really affect my lifestyle.
It's not funny that you say that, but actually I saw a doctor 2 days ago. And because I've been having a lot of symptoms as of late, and I said exactly what you just said. It feels like my brain's been turned into concrete. Like, intellectually, I'm great, you know, but it feels like there's like literally somebody cut my skull open and put somebody else's brain in there. And I've said this a few times. I don't know if I said it on the podcast, like some little kid just scribbled black crayon all over my brain. And, you know, then having to deal with, you know, substance abuse issues. You know, I do work a 12-step program as well, which obviously helps, but it doesn't take away, you know, obviously the impacts to the brain. So when you have one issue on top of the other issue and you're dealing with that, I mean, it takes a lot of courage to keep moving forward and obviously, you know, paying it forward at the same time. So I think it's really important that, I mean, whether or not you made it to the NHL or not, you know, a lot of these, you know, the hockey community, the athletic community in general needs to come together and really support these individuals. I mean, it's a life or death situation. Like, I mean, I was friends with Rick Rippon, Wade Belak was a good buddy of mine, you know, back in the day. I didn't meet Derek Bougard, but obviously he went through the same kind of stuff. I mean, so many, you know, there's too many to name.
Well, but, and if we go back to, you know, I came out, I believe it was 2011, and I said that the enforcer's dying from the lifestyle. Don Cherry on Hockey Night in Canada had called me a puke, turncoat, and a hypocrite because I was that type of player. Now I'm saying taking fighting out of the game. It wasn't about that. It was about the addiction that I used to numb the fear. So two bottles of wine before a game, popping some pills, marijuana, whatever the case may be. And then as we look at the Cordix and the Bougards and these different individuals who either died of, you know, overdose, heart attacks, or suicide, there's no goal scorers in there. There's no, you know what I'm saying? Like, just look at the industry. And that's where I was saying, okay, there's an issue here. And now I'm going to tell you something, Ryan. I took a blasting from a lot of current and former players. How the hell could you be saying something like this? And I use the example of this. Two of my parents had died from smoking and drinking their whole lives. They're alcoholics and they smoke cigarettes since they're young people. One died at 61, one died at 69. So the history says if you're going to continue to live this lifestyle, you're going to die early. Well, imagine the knocks to the brain, and we're finding out more through the CTE that, you know, just watch the movie Concussion and all these different things that we're finding out. So my thing was take the knuckles off the brain because we don't need it. You know, the fight lovers, go watch the UFC. And that's what my point was. It wasn't to take people's jobs away. Just we don't need the fighting like it used to be. And look how beautiful the game is today. The playoffs were unbelievable. The speed of the game. And so, you know, it's something that you and I both suffer from today. Many guys are in worse shape than we are.
Yeah.
But I'm pleased of what Gary Bettman has done at the top level, which moves down to, you know, you see the major juniors now taking more stances on fighting and that. There's no need for it. Yeah. I don't need to see a young guy on the ice knocked out, bleeding from the brain, you know, hits his head on the ice. There's no sense. So
did you play with Paul Kariya in Anaheim?
Well, I was hurt when he got drafted there, so I never actually played with them. I was part of the team until they bought me out.
Okay.
But there's a guy that's career was, you know, really messed up.
Yeah.
And I think Paul still suffers from.
Yeah, he does. Well, we grew up together, Paul and I. We played together against each other. Our families are very close friends. And I mean, he suffered from terrible depression, you know. Yeah. I mean, 2 years of his life, he doesn't even remember. I remember when he came back off that hit with Scott Stevens there. I think it was game six of the Stanley Cup Finals there. I mean, he doesn't even remember coming back and scoring the goal.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's, I mean, and there's a guy that, I mean, with that hit right there, I think was like a defining moment. His career could have been, you know, prolonged, but obviously a lot more productive as well. That guy, that's more 100%. Talented. Unbelievable.
Phenomenal athlete, took the game very serious. What I remember of Paul was how serious he was. He was serious, serious. When it came to his craft, he was all business. One story I love to tell about him is watching him work on the knuckle puck. So he actually would get the puck on in when he would shoot it in from center, and he would actually work on that in practice. It's not because of the movie. It's because of the change of the angle of the puck that can actually mess a goalie up, right? And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. Never seen that before, right? But he'd get the puck on in and then quick snapshot, slap, half slapper, and it would whistle in there, you know, making all these different directions. So, yeah, great, great hockey player, great person. You know, just it's sad. It's sad of how his took him out early too.
Yeah, he was the epitome of self-discipline, even growing up as a 16, 17-year-old. I mean, he was just on a whole nother level. So, I know you're passionate about substance abuse recovery. Can you give the audience your backstory on recovery and how it's affected not only your life, but all the lives you've been able to help through your own experience, strength, and hope?
So, I grew up in a trailer park, Westview Village, which was outside Edmonton.
Yeah.
And when we talk about the Trailer Park Boys show, it's not much different than how we grew up. No money, you know, you're finding a way to, you know, survive in a sense. My dad worked in the oil rig, so he was gone 2 weeks and home for 3 days. So he was he was in my life, but not really in my life. My mom never had a driver's license. She raised 10 kids. And I got a job when I was 9 years old delivering papers. At 12, I was introduced. Now, my parents, remember, were both alcoholics. So I got introduced to marijuana and a champagne called Baby Duck at 12 years old. So before school in grade 8, we'd go over to my buddy's house and get stoned and drink Baby Duck. That's what we did. And I had the money to pay for it because at this point I'm timekeeping. So I'd go over and timekeep the men's league and I was making good money. So I had the money to supply it. And this is what we got into. So that led Ryan to cocaine, to crack cocaine, to OxyContin, Percocets, opiates, all that stuff. Right. And I'm not going to take you all the way through my life, but you know, getting addicted to alcohol and drugs at a young age. It was in the bloodline. It was in my DNA because of my parents and brothers. You know, it was a battle that I've been battling since I was 12. And I battle it to this day. When I drive by a place I used to sit for 2 days and use, and, you know, I call it Loserville, Monsterville, like, you lose yourself. And so my addiction was heavy. Contemplated, I was very close to suicide 3 times. Something I tell everybody I work with. The only time I was really serious about suicide is when I was up all weekend as a loser. Yeah. Look in the mirror, I'm a monster and I'm worthless to my 3 young kids, and was very close to ending it because I just felt they didn't deserve me as a shit father. So that went on till, you know, I'm going into my 13th year of sobriety. I'm 54. So anybody listening about the numbers, they can do the math of how long.
There is a solution.
There's a solution. So
I went to. It ain't always easy.
No. I went to a place where a lot of NHL guys have gone to and straight, you know, got some education in rehab and learn how to live properly.
Yeah.
And stuff that I missed as the youngest of 10, I really didn't get a lot of parenting. My parents in their whole life never told me they loved me. They weren't those type of parents, right? So there was a lot of things missed that I learned in rehab at 41 years old going, wow, that's pretty amazing. So that helped me rebuild my platform of being a man, a father, and a structured individual. So coming out of that, I did relapse. Then on my son's birthday, like I said, 13 years ago, I was flying home from Edmonton after a 2-day, crazy party, and I surrendered, and that was it. And haven't touched anything since. But it was heavy duty, probably the worst drug of all of them was OxyContin. That was, as you know, the late Derek Bougard, he was on that end booze, and there'd be nights in bed, Ryan, and my heart would be beating out of my chest, and I was scared to move my leg. It was like, okay, I'm going to die tonight. That's how messed up it was. And,
I know the feeling. I've had my battle with pills as well. I mean, pills, just alcohol and pill form, really, at the end of the day.
Yeah. See, what I was taking Oxys for was to come off the coke. Because as you know, coke, you're wired, smoking crack, you're wired for sound. So I'd pump the Oxys into me to try and get my depression and the anxiety down so I could at least try to fall asleep. But I mean, it was just a chemical roller coaster.
Yeah. Yeah. Tough to get off. I mean, coming off pills was a lot harder than coming off alcohol. That's for sure. Alcohol
worst was pain, easy. Worst pain in my life. I broke a lot of bones. Okay. I've been through some serious stuff. The worst pain I ever went through was coming off OxyContin of 3 years. I went through 8 days of detox. For 6 of those days, I couldn't walk. I had to crawl to the bathroom. It felt like my bones were going to explode in my body. The pain was excruciating. And I'll never forget it. And it was 8 days of torture. The 8th day I started walking, my three kids, would say to my ex-wife, "What's wrong with daddy?" It's like, "What's wrong with him?" Right? Because they couldn't come in and see me. I was a mess. So pills were the worst by far.
Absolutely. Yeah. The body's such a phenomenal mechanism, with the ability to actually heal itself. But number one is you got to have the desire to heal. That's the thing, mm-hmm. I say it over and over again. You gotta feel it to heal it. That's not always the easiest thing in the world. God.
Yeah.
Trauma, everything that goes on behind all the outside issues, everything all packed into the whole soup of mental health, so to speak. It's not an easy go for people that look, from the outside, that don't maybe have the same kind of, we're human beings. We all, struggle and have our challenges, but add addiction into it. It's not the easiest go in the world, but it's nice to be able to have a support system.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was going to say, so when did you know that you actually had a problem with alcohol and the deep emotional feelings that aren't really understood, let's say, by functional drinkers? When did you feel like the disease had a contract on your life?
You know, that is such an awesome question. And this is where it was. Being so into my son's hockey, he's been fortunate enough to go off and play university hockey. When I was taking him when he was younger, and I'd be going to tournaments and getting completely messed up, or taking him to practices, leaving the practice, which I've never done, and finding the closest pub to pound a few beers just to get the edge off. That's when I realized I'm a freaking alcoholic. So what you learn in rehab, you drink every day. I could have one glass of wine a day. I'm an alcoholic. I'm depending on that glass of wine. Some people would say, well, I don't get drunk. Doesn't matter. You can look at it any way you want. But what I was finding now is I had to have it. So I'd be going to the rink, the anxiety and that would all be just controlling me. So I'd drop him off, get him into the rink, and I would sneak out and go for a couple tall boys somewhere and come back before practice was over. So he saw me and I'm going, I got a problem. That's when I said, I got a problem. Like, I got a serious problem here. And I was very fortunate. My ex-wife put me through an intervention and that saved my life. And, I went away and got the education to be better. But when you ask that question, it still resonates with me today is when I started leaving the sport I love and watch. There's nothing better than watching my son play hockey. That was my addiction at that point, right? And then I'm actually saying, this is more important, but I couldn't control it.
Yeah. It just gets such a stronghold on you. That's the thing. It's, you don't know unless you know,
Exactly. Yeah.
So, Mike Hartman said he used to beat the crap out of you. Is that true? We talked to you a few days back and he said to relay the message to send you his very best. And funny enough, I'm going on his show this week. And anyways, he said, you're a great guy. And like I said, to give you all his best. So,
well, it's funny. He and I played against each other a lot. He was in Rochester playing for Buffalo's farm team. I was in Binghamton, Baltimore, pick your poison, New Haven. So Mike was always a guy that you could tell without even knowing him that he was a nice guy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I knew we were going to fight, but there's guys that were just assholes. And then there's guys that you say, you know what? He's just doing his job. Now, I remember he had just gotten traded to Winnipeg and his first game was against us. So when I saw that the trade was made, we were playing in LA. I knew him and I were fighting that night. And we ended up fighting, had a really good fight. And he's a guy that I always admired and respected and didn't even know until we then you get to, meet guys here and there and talk to them a bit, but I don't know Mike well, except high and by, except that he's a real gentleman. So yeah. Back at him saying hi and a great deal of respect for him. But, here's a guy that fought his way through the ranks and didn't back down from anybody. And yeah, I admired him. There's one guy, I don't say that about everybody. I admired Mike Hartman.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a pretty awesome guy. We had a great talk on the phone the other night and big shout to Mike and his podcast. He's got a podcast going right now that's doing quite well. So
yeah.
Yeah. For anyone out there, tune in. He's a great guy. So what's your main message to the world, Jimmy? You have such a powerful story that keeps paying it forward. And so here's your opportunity to give your message to the world. I know you do it anyways and you live it, you live gratitude in action, as I can tell. So I don't know, give it to us.
Well, I do a PowerPoint presentation. Could be for an NHL team, could be for a school, a rehab center. And there's one slide on there where a guy's on the cliff. If you Google it, teamwork it's called. And a guy's saving him from falling off the cliff. And to me, it's the most powerful picture because nothing in life we can do on our own. There's nothing you can do. You need either your family, you need somebody to be a teammate in whatever area it is in what you need. So the message I put out there is, keep your team, your backbone alive. And that means stay in communication. We go into shells, Ryan, where we stop communicating with people that are important. And we need, especially at this time, is to show each other, how much we care.
Yeah.
And my message to everybody, especially through this awful year of 2020, is when you're sitting around and you're on your phone and a private message, just to ask somebody how they're doing. I get messages from people that kind of know, but I really don't know. And I will say this to you, you inspired me just by the way you talked to me and I'd never met you. And I'm thinking, and then I started reading about you and saying, seeing your bike ride. And I said, this guy's, he's bleeding enthusiasm to help people. And that's what I'm talking about because you made me feel like, wow, you gave me energy, if you understand what I'm saying, because you're living your life right and you're putting good vibes out to people. So to answer your question, the more we help people feel good, the better our world's going to be. And that's my biggest message is, my father always told me it costs nothing to say good morning or nothing to say goodbye. And I will walk through a grocery store and there could be an elderly lady there. And once we catch eyes, I'll say, how are you? And you can just see what it does for. Or I could just walk by and not say a word. And there's your choice. If you want to make her day better, because I'll tell you what, it makes my day better when she says hi back and smiles. Just good stuff, right? So that's
simple
my
simple acts of kindness.
Really, just an act of kindness. Be kind. Yep.
Yeah. That's it's it. Funny how it comes back to you in ways when you 100%. Just don't expect it. I mean, I'm the same way. I don't believe anybody's any better than anybody else. You know, we're all on this planet. We're all on this sphere that just keeps it. The world doesn't stop turning. So, you know, while we're here, we might as well give it the best go we can. And, you know, whatever rocks and stones or whatever and fists and whatever have been thrown our way, you know, we can use all that. You know, we can 100%. Use all that to be able to, you know, give back. And
you said it, kindness. I got a tattoo here. It's my favorite tattoo. Respect.
That's awesome.
Respect. I say to everybody, you got respect, you got empathy, you got all kinds of things. And just a person that's respectful to me is what we need to help a lot of people with. Just show some kindness and respect.
Yeah. Thank you very much for complimenting me. I'm not really too good at receiving them. I'm good at giving them though.
Yeah, no, it's true though. Your vibe is, you know, you get a vibe from a person and you right away dig into what's this guy. And then I start seeing what your DNA is and your bike ride and all that stuff. And I'm going, no wonder, right? You're in phenomenal shape. You live your life right now. And that's a powerful message for other people, right? You know, the best drug for me now is to work out and keep my body active because I feel better.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I just feel better.
Yeah, sometimes doing what you don't, it's getting to the gym getting moving. When your mind's saying don't do it, it's like go do it, because after you do it, you end up feeling better and you bring that positive energy into your body. You know, it releases natural endorphins, the dopamine, and, you know, the high levels of, say, like stress, you know, the cortisol and, you know, the fight or flight, 100%. So to speak, you know, kind of levels 100%. You down a bit. And, you know, you try to, you hope the next day is going to be as good as the last one. But, you know, we're human. We go through good days and bad days. But at the end of the day, we just kind of do the best we can. Right. So
that's it.
So, Mike, oh my God, I'll cut that one out. Jerry, Mike's beside me right now. How can we follow your journey on how can we follow your journey moving forward on social media? Your website, obviously. I know all our audience will be interested in that.
So my Instagram and Twitter are Jim Thompson 33, no P in Thompson. My website's Jim Thompson's Dreams Do Come True. You can just Google that and, you know, see what I do. And it's very rewarding to help to is move it forward. And again, I thank you for giving me an opportunity to, you know, tell my platform and my billboard about what's going on, because the more people that listen that there's life after addiction, that's an important thing, Ryan.
Absolutely. Well, I really appreciate your message, Jimmy. It's greatly appreciated, and I'd love to have you on again sometime too.
Anytime. Know? And thank you for coming into my life. I just, you know, you're good people, and let me know anytime and make sure you say hi to Mike Hartman for me.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll be talking to him tomorrow. So make sure I'll give him a rip back for you.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful.
All right. We'll be in touch in the next few days here. Yeah, whatever I can do to help out in any way or, you know, with what you're doing.
We'll be talking, Ryan.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Okay, Jimmy. Have a great day. And I know it's your son's birthday. So
yeah, we're going to celebrate it right now.
Celebrate her up, man.
Thank you.
Take good care. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.